Our next speaker is Holger Wehrli from ResMed in Germany.
Dear Chairperson, dear colleagues, thank you. I just want to add a few different perspectives to Dr. Keever's nice presentation, since we're coming from a little bit different field. So what I wanted to add to is, I mean, the experience in device trials is based on implanted medical devices mainly, and I wanted to discuss the perspective of two other fields which are arising. One is sleep disorder breathing therapy. The other one is non-invasive home monitoring. And with that comes the role of compliance adherence into device clinical trials, which I think affects the outcomes. And the other one is it's more difficult to select the right sham device, and I wanted to at least touch these two points. And then also the point is when we plan randomized controlled trials, we all plan now for hard outcomes. But I agree, you know, like Dr. Pocock said, there's a big difference between registries and randomized controlled trials, but there's also always a big age difference. You know, in RCTs, we always have the younger patients. And for them, the hard outcomes is much more important than for the real heart failure patient, for example, who's 10 years older, where I think, you know, the hard outcomes are not anymore that important. So I wanted also to very briefly raise these points. So as you can see, if somebody gets a treatment of sleep disorder breathing, so he gets his upper airway splinted by a mask, you can't really blind that setting. I mean, you can't do anything like Batman, The Dark Knight Rises and blind the world, you know, for a certain period of time. It's just impossible to do kind of like a blinded treatment. So people came up with sham devices. And there is actually no real sham device. So what they tried to do, they drilled holes in the mask right here, or they put a resistor up to the ventilator, which creates the problem that it affects the outcomes of the therapy acceptance. So you get a lower compliance, and patients feel that it is different, you know, than the real experience. So they can feel that they have sham just by talking to the other patient waiting in the ambulance, for example, or in the outpatient clinic. Then what was tried in research is then, since they may not be neutral, they try to use subtherapeutic settings, so not splint the upper airway completely, just use a subtherapeutic pressure. And studies have been published with that, RCTs, and so what they did is they used the lowest setting that you can choose, and we're hoping that this is not therapeutic. And there's the most often cited blood pressure study in sleep disorder breathing was published in Circulation, just to show you that they had they call it a subtherapeutic group and a therapeutic group. And what you can see, the measure of the severity of sleep disorder breathing is here. It was around, they had like around 60 events per hour. But the subtherapeutic group already reduced the respiratory stress by half, you know. So it's already a subtherapeutic but therapeutic treatment. And that creates the question, you know, is there a sham or any possibility? And actually, we don't see one, which affects your setup of a clinical trial. The other one is we haven't talked about compliance. The one good thing about either if you do home monitoring or if you do CPAP therapy or other forms of PAP therapy, you can measure compliance. You know, we can measure if the patient uses it. So here you see, for example, So here you see the device download. You can objectively measure if a patient uses the therapy. The same with home monitoring. I mean, if the patient goes on for Christmas to Europe, but he's got his home monitoring device in the U.S., it's hard that it can affect any kind of hospitalization, and you can measure that if the patient is present or not. I think those are important points for future clinical trials in that area. And also, with adherence, there's a dose response curve. You know, that's for quality of life. It has been shown. Here's one example. Also for cardiovascular outcomes, that's our biggest challenge. You know, here's a lately published study in JAMA that shows if you use your positive airway pressure more than 4 hours a night, you get in a slightly underpowered trial an effect on reducing cardiovascular complications. You know, if the patient doesn't use the device, there is no effect. You know, but it's then highly criticized because it's a per-protocol analysis of a randomized controlled trial. But that's the challenge that we're trying to face, and that's why I was very happy to be invited here and to discuss that. And we know why it is, because we know from blood pressure studies. Now I'm getting this. I'm not a statistician. You're not supposed to do that with me. So I'm, you know, it's. Could you just press the button? Any? So what I wanted to show you is that we know from any kind of physiological studies that there is a dose response effect. So the more you use your CPAP device, the more your blood pressure drops. And we know that from all the other forms of positive airway pressure therapy. So also if we do an outcome trial, we expect that there is a dose response effect, and that's something we need to factor in from my point of view. The final point that I wanted to raise for the discussion is something with the registry versus RCT is the endpoint. As long as we want to have hard outcomes, and the regulatory bodies we talk to always tell us, you know, we want to have the hard outcomes. But the challenge that we have is that we have the not really the real-world patient population in our trials that we're trying to treat in our everyday practice, you know, because those patients are at least 5 to 10 years older. And I can tell you the average age of a heart failure patient in Germany is 76 years old. The average life expectancy of a male is 76. So the question is, you know, is it better to live longer or is it living better for longer, the right outcome for these patients? And that's why I just wanted to add that to the discussion. So I think when we talk about non-invasive applications, we have to look differently at them. Non-invasive sham devices may not be neutral. That certainly has to take into account. We can objectively measure compliance in non-invasive therapies. That needs to be addressed, I think. And my final point is patient-reported outcomes need to be upgraded, because with that, we can, I think, change the selection bias for clinical trials, and with that, we would move closer registry results to RCTs. Thank you very much.